Good afternoon. It is One Bell of the Afternoon Watch, and this is your Captain Joe, broadcasting not from the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio, but from the Coast Guard base at Pier 36. I'm down here to see if I can talk to some people from the Coast Guard cutter Polar Sea. Polar Sea is decommissioned, and she is going to be moved from Pier 36 to the reserve fleet in Suisun, California. And I have screwed up my arrangements to get down here and to organize this in my usual efficient way, between some decisions that I made about the ferry travel this morning and the ferry system backing up on both ends of the island. I have just now arrived at the Bear Room, which is a dining facility here on the Coast Guard base, and have not yet been able to get hold of any of the Polar Sea people. And in the meantime, there is a presentation being made, and I am not a part of all of that. So we're going to see how I can make this pull together. But while I am doing all of that, I am going to deliver greetings to Polar Sea from two of my old icebreaker friends. And before I do that, I want to send greetings out to all people who sailed in Polar Sea. Her hull number WAGV-11, and she is the sister ship to Polar Star, WAGV-10. Polar Star, of course, is still in active service, and in fact, she is alongside in her berth along right astern of Healy here at the Coast Guard base. So I send greetings to all people who sailed in Polar Sea, and one of the missions that I was responsible for having her make was a transit across the Northwest Passage in the late 1980s, just before I became an honored retiree, and I needed to move Polar Sea from Greenland, where she'd been working in around Thule, across to do some work in the Arctic, in the American Arctic. And so to that end, I issued orders for her to sail from Greenland through the Northwest Passage. And I notified the Canadians, and I notified our State Department, made all the proper notifications, but the Canadians decided that it was time to give us a little bit of flack and to claim that sailing through the Northwest Passage was inside Canadian territorial waters and that it needed a permission rather than a notification. The sequel to all of that was that I ended up going to Ottawa, and the commandant, who was Jim Gracie at that time, Admiral Jim Gracie, one of the great gentlemen of our service, called me in, and he said, "Captain Joe, what have you gotten me into this time?" And he ended up with a session with both the Secretary of Transportation, because we were in transportation at that time, and with the Secretary of State. And I ended up going up to Ottawa and having a meeting with the foreign minister, the Canadian foreign minister. The solution to the problem was that we insisted that we had every right to make the transit with a notification, a courtesy notification, and that to make all of this work out, that we were extending an invitation to, in particular, the Canadian Coast Guard, and in particular, the Canadian Coast Guard icebreaker people, to go along with polar sea as she made the transit. What came out of that in the long term was the beginning of the Canadian strengthening their own rules about ice classifications for ships, and the question of whether the Northwest Passage is internal waters to Canada or whether they are international waters was to some extent put on abeyance and held in thrall. So today, whenever we need to go through the Northwest Passage, we notify the Canadians and we invite them to ride with us. And that's the way it ended then, and that's the way that it is today. And we remain, as always, with the most friendly and happiest of terms with the Canadian Coast Guard and with the Canadian government. I am, of course, related by marriage to half of Canada, and so they are special and important people to me. So greetings to all people who sailed in Polar Sea. I'm going to move from the compartment in which I have ensconced myself while this presentation has been going on and move out and talk to some people. But before I do that, I have to also bring in the binnacle list. And the binnacle list is expanded mightily this week with people who are in some serious difficulties. And in particular, the son of one of my icebreaker colleagues, Kurt, and who is in the hospital, and we are waiting for a series of tests to find out what's going to happen there. And my friend Jay, with the serious cancers, continues to make good progress. But a number of Captain Joe's people who are in the situation of having either surgeries or serious medical appointments and lab work, we're waiting for all of that to happen so that we can indeed move everybody off of the binnacle list and back onto full duty, as is the right way to do it and not the wrong way. The Polar Sea was built right here in Seattle. She was built in the shipyard, which was then known as Lockheed. She and her sister, Polar Star, and is now over 50 years old. We had hoped that she would be able to be resurrected. And, in fact, that hope was not to be fulfilled. I'm going to move us out and see if I can't pick up some of the presentations that are being made.
Ever gone 60 knots from Western. And then Fairbanks Morse sold us this new upgraded diesel engine package. I shouldn't say anything bad about Fairbanks Morse. But from that day forward, with this new configuration, the Polar Sea goes 80 knots of diesel Western. It actually was probably putting out more like 3,500 horsepower per day, 1,000 horsepower per day. Had higher firing pressures, like that's the PSI that the engine runs at. They'd always been around 1,600 but PSI, so that's pretty high, but they ran at 2,100 PSI after that, and that was just enough so the piston ring would take the chrome away from the liners, and then, which is bad, diesel engine was the one for a while, but so they ran really well, really cool, right up until the minute that they blew up. So it was kind of a little bit of sarcasm, just there, you can laugh a little bit. So, they ran well, the crews loved it, but we started to see those failures, like piston crown coming off, piston coming up inside the engine, those types of issues like that. So we studied those for a year and prototyped a solution on Polar Sea, bunch of times, a bunch of different configurations, and that's how we figure out the configuration that Polar Star would use in the future, which was reverting to the old engine components with the new ABB turbo, and that's what it's still sailing with today.
So I hope we're picking this up.
I always kind of thought of it as it was a very big political climate at that time, and there was a $90 million contract and bigger to reactivate Polar Star at that point. So nobody wanted to cancel that. There's a longshoreman, it's a King County, all the senators here are very powerful, and they were not going to cancel that Polar Star contract. So that's supported with a lot of inside knowledge that we had at that time. They're so powerful that the reason why Polar C is still in Mission Special today, because they literally wrote it into the law that we could not decommission Polar C. They wrote it into a law, like a federal code, that we could not put anyone in charge of decommissioning. That we couldn't remove parts without congressional approval after we couldn't sail a couple times. They were like, okay, you can ask this person and they'll approve it if you need it. But that was kind of the journey that we took that decade after that, like 12 years after that. You know.
Can you speak to the spare parts side of that story? How that spread?
Everyone who sailed remembers, it's like a mission to the moon. We had every single thing that we needed on that boat. After you leave Hawaii, there's nothing that you can get. You can't really pick it up in Australia. There's probably some supply offices that I have been in here. We did get some stuff in Australia, New Zealand and things like that. We picked down there to the airport. But you have everything you need on board there, but we had to catalog it, inventory it. When Mark was here at the base, we had to bring that stuff ashore, put it in a warehouse, and we had to track it and do annual inventory to make sure that nothing was disposed of according to these laws. So it was difficult, but the Polar Sea crew members, Polar Star crew members at that point would just work with us, tell us exactly what they need, and we thinned out some of those parts over the years and keep the boat in service. And there were, we'd come on board and be like, service air compressor that is a one-of-a-kind oil cooler. So we had to remove that at one time. Or for the 1MC, you had to go up and get an amplifier. So we had to go get that. There were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of those things last year. One of that were on that vessel, put on there 50 years ago, but there's no other replacement out there. So that was kind of the game that we had to play the last. Whoever was sailing that year would take that on board because we were going to have water and things like that. So there's all these pieces of parts of this. That's why we articulated as best we can. Like, you can't put that into what we always change parts. And they put in line anyway.
Why did they take the cranes off of the Polar Sea?
Because rainwater would hit the cable. We knew we'd never sail with those cranes again. It was environmental. The cranes off because of the cables with the grease that, 3 years worth of grease, 4 years worth of grease, rainwater would always hit those. And
when we bought the new cranes, we got a stronger
Ally.
Ally big crane. We didn't buy a spare or anything. We buy it.
I think we intercepted it.
Intercepted purchase.
We repo that. Cut that in half.
Cut that in half.
In 2016, you get permission to preserve Polar Sea because the longer we preserve it, the longer we have viable parts. So we towed it down to Portland, to the bigger marine down in Portland, and we took the propellers off, all the shafts out, sealed up the whole vessel by a company called Kuku, which is the main subcontractor for Marad for the reserve fleet down there, put float switches and throughout all the buildings of the vessel, smoke alarms, heat sensors throughout the vessel. Light indicators for here at the base so you can see if there was any issue on board and dehumidification and stuff like that. So that's been running that way for the last 8 years. object with how it was towed. It just kept sneaking up on the tow truck. So we actually, when we towed it back, once we took those propellers off, we had to get a bunch of shots of chain and hang them off the stern just to mimic what it would look like with propellers. And somewhere along the way from Portland, I think about Cameron Cevo on the Columbia River and the starboard rail, and there's a little extra non-speed with the starboard rail when we got home. So there's a photo of kind of the bird and the rail over the whole way up here.
Now we've got six spare plus the full stop.
I think, yeah, I think we have more than one. I think we have over the one on full star plus.
Captain Joe, and I was Polar Sea's program manager and fleet manager when you all went across the Northwest Passage. And so I'm broadcasting live on Voice of Vashon right this very minute. And your wake and your sadness is being communicated to Coast Guard people all over the world, because Captain Joe's people are from Stockholm on one side of the world to Singapore on the other. And although I never sailed personally in Polar Sea, I was your manager when you underwent a number of exciting adventures. And I bring with me greetings from Captain Lawson Brigham, who took Polar Sea to the North Pole. I see that Captain Mark is standing right here in front of me, another old friend. And also from Captain Swedberg, who was not able to be with you all today. since Mark has put this together, I'd really like to get one of the really junior, youngest then enlisted people to come up and talk on the broadcast. Who is our youngest? Not guys with long beards, but who is most junior? Do I have a seaman or a fireman who sailed in Polar Sea as either a seaman or a fireman? All right, give me a chief petty officer. I was raised by chief petty officers. Give me a chief petty officer. I was raised by chief petty officers when I was a 95 footer captain. Are you a chief? Come on, Chief. This maidenly reluctance doesn't become you. Tell me your name.
Chief Eric Crone. I was on Polar Sea for Deep Freeze 92 and Nuke 92.
All right. And I see that you're Chief Electrician's Mate.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about the challenges electrically for the Polar class.
Polar class, when I was on the Polar Star, it was mainly just the parts. Reliability of old parts, receiving old parts, trying to keep an old ship running. It was a major endeavor.
So I take this opportunity to thank you and to all chief petty officers who helped raise me up when I was a very young officer. And I'm enormously grateful for all of that. And I wish you well in whatever is the next step in your particular life. That's some beard that you've got there, by the way. Thank you for coming on up. So, Captain, all right, tell me who you are.
My
my name's Rod Snyder. I was a seaman on board here. When I joined the Coast Guard, I had never seen the ocean, never been on a boat. And this was my first assignment, so it couldn't ask for anything better. And I served under Captain Boyer during 1990-92 trips. There was one north trip, two south in Antarctica. And we did the Northwest Passage together on that north trip. And he was a fantastic captain. And I tell you what, I was just a country boy from western Pennsylvania, had never seen anything, and got to see icebergs and the world. And it was a great decision I made. I'm really glad.
So once you decided to leave the service, what did you decide to do?
Well, during my time of service, I got the Coast Guard Aviation. So when I got out, I went to work for Bombardier Learjet in Wichita, Kansas. So I worked there and then continued on doing an aviation career for a while. And now I'm currently doing security equipment servicing. So doing x-rays and metal detectors, things like that.
Okay. Here's step forward.
All right, thank you.
These are such people that are so reluctant.
You said very much so. People are a little bit afraid of the mic. So. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it.
How are you? Hey, this is Captain Terry Julek, former Polar Sea sailor and Polar Star sailor for six of my years. So, very good memories. Today is a very, well, for me, a sad day to see Polar Sea head down to California. But, hey, she served us well during her time.
So Captain Julek is here with his lovely lady, and Captain Julek and the captain, your captain, have been friends for, I don't know how many years, but a long, long time. That's right, and that's when I was the program manager. And were you in her when she went across the Northwest Passage? So, tell me, Terry, how many deep freeze deployments altogether have you made?
I've made 5 deep freeze deployments. So, yes.
And well done on that. And it is lovely always to see you and to have a chance to visit with you. And you too. You're looking lovely today. Thank you.
You're looking great as well. Let me thank you.
We're hanging together.
Yeah. My 50th birthday comes up.
All right, I'm going to walk around and go to another captain who's an old friend. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Captain Joe. How are you?
Okay.
What do you want me to talk about?
Because I was
with you in your cabin when you were still captain in Polar Sea, and we talked then about adventures.
Give me one.
Okay, how about when we lost a blade in the ice?
Yes.
I was sitting in my cabin with the operations officer telling me something. All of a sudden, we started jumping up and down like I was on a pogo stick. And I heard the engine room call the bridge on the box and say, major loss of CPP oil pressure. And I said, we just lost the blade. And shortly thereafter, the engineer came up and knocked on the door. And he had a fairly dark complexion. He was of Pacific Island ancestry. Honest to God, he was white as a ghost. And I said, we just lost a blade, didn't we? And he said, I think so, sir. And just departed the ship. So, yes. And Healy was already on their way. And as Captain Vincenzi said, well, you still have more horsepower than we do. We stopped the ship and we put Diver down to go and inspect and confirm what we suspected. And then sealed the inside of the ship because now we have an access point for flooding through the CPP hub. Because the oil went out, the water can come in. And kind of cleaned it up the best we could, and then we proceeded with the mission the next day. I was waving at you. I was indeed, because the man giving the presentation spoke of you, and I heard that, and I went and looked him down, and I looked, found him, and said, "So you're the guy who just talked about Captain Joe?" And he said, "Yes." And so I told him what our background was, and I assume we're still live to the radio, right? I told him what stuck with me the most about you, and maybe you heard this, was that I always appreciated that you genuinely loved your crew. Something I always felt as a young J.O., and you were putting up with all those obstreperous lads in the District 13. And I explained how you lost, you gapped all your senior officers except for one, and you had this whole division being run by these whippersnappers and somehow survived, and you're still here. So,
and it is a sad day for all of us who are Red Hawk, Red Hall people. It is also to get together with people that I haven't seen for a long time, and you're one of them. And the last change of command that we encountered each other, right?
And it was indeed reported to me that you were not commanding Virginia Beach.
No, I don't have a license, so I deck crew, and I'm working on my practice for BM3.
Oh, good, good. How about the part where you learned to use the bosun's call? Now, how are you doing on
that? Not so good on that. I can handle lines. So.
How about mess gear? Oh. Mess gear with the crew.
No.
You can't do that. But you still remember keep in mind.
Yeah, well, it's cool.
You know, periodically, I sit in my office, which was very ours, crow's nest in our home before she died, and I sit up there and I go through the commands to get underway, especially to come alongside. Unbacking bell, put over all of them, double up, secure, call away the First Liberty Party, and that's it.
So this is your Captain Joe. We have once again come to the end of our time together. I hope that all of this came through for everybody. This has been kind of a sad time for me, but also a happy time, because I've been able to meet and talk with a number of people that I haven't seen for a long time. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly.